in the Shir Maral Gurarye, Parshios Matos of Masse. Wanted to start tonight with the Rashi and the Maharal at the beginning of Parshas Matos. So the Parshas starts off by David Rosh Matos with Bnei Yisrael Leymar. Moshe spoke to the head of the tribes of Bnei Yisrael saying as follows, Zeh HaDavar Asher Tziva Hashem. This is the matter which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has commanded. And of course, as we know, Moshe Rabbeinu goes on to explicate all of the laws. Some of the laws that are relevant to Nedarim and Shavuot, all different types of vows that a person can take upon himself, undoing the vow, what if a person's wife vows, again, all the halakhas that are relevant to vows. With regard to the language, Zeh HaDavar Asher Tziva Hashem, this is the matter which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has commanded. So Rashi writes as follows, Moshe Nisnade B'Kol Amar Hashem Ka'atos HaLaylo Zanadim Nisnade B'Kol Amar Hashem. There's a language which is utilized by many Nevi'im, including Moshe Rabbeinu, when they introduce their various prophecies. Kol Amar Hashem, thus says Hashem. However, Moshe Faleh Moshe Shinisnade B'Loshem Zeh HaDavar. Moshe Rabbeinu has something additional to all of the other Nevi'im, because Moshe Rabbeinu not only uses the language of Kol Amar Hashem, thus says Hashem, in introducing his Nevuos, but as we see over here in the beginning of Parshas Matos, Moshe Rabbeinu also introduces his Nevuos with the language of Zeh HaDavar, this is the matter. And clearly what Rashi is saying over here is that there's something superior about the language of Zeh HaDavar over the language of Kol Amar Hashem. After all, Kol Amar Hashem is a language which is used by all Nevi'im, whereas Zeh HaDavar is used by Moshe Rabbeinu exclusively. But what Rashi doesn't really spell out is, you know, what is the advantage or the superiority that Zeh HaDavar has over Kol Amar Hashem. So on that, the Maral speaks out a very, I think, basic yisod, a very basic idea in terms of understanding the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu in general, and I think it's something very worthwhile to see. So first, as he so often does, the Maral uses the words of Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrachi as a foil off of which he's going to disagree and present his own mahalach. Chosav Harav Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrachi, the Mizrachi writes, Shetam Adavar, Kizeh Adavar, Mashma Adavar Haramus Lugamri, Zehu Adavar, right? So the Mizrachi is trying to explain why is Kol Amar Hashem different or worse than Zeh HaDavar. What is so unique about Zeh HaDavar that only Moshe Rabbeinu uses it? Says the Mizrachi, because Zeh HaDavar indicates that there's something clearly discernible at which one can, so to speak, point. We know that Rashi brings from Chazal in many places in Chumash that whenever the Torah uses the word Zeh, right, it indicates that Moshe Rabbeinu was shown an image of something concrete, right? The Zeh Maaseh HaMenorah, right? Zeh Yitnu Kol Over HaPkudim, this is the menorah, this is the Maaseh HaShekel, right? Zosa Behem Asher Tocheilu, you know, this is the animal which you should eat. You know, very, very often Rashi brings from Chazal that indicates that Moshe Rabbeinu was shown something in a very tangible and concrete kind of way. So too says the Mizrachi, so Zeh HaDavar means that Moshe Rabbeinu was given this Nevuah, this prophecy, in a very concrete and tangible way, as he explains. We know the Gemara says that the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu was like looking at something through a clear glass, as Saklaria HaMeira. Right, so therefore, since Moshe Rabbeinu had a degree of clarity that the other Nevi'im lacked, that's why the language associated with Moshe Rabbeinu is Zeh HaDavar. This is what it is. The Ko Eino Mashma Al Dover HaRamus, the Huba Al Mechuvon Min HaInyon. In contrast, Ko Omer Hashem, thus says Hashem, indicates a certain lack of clarity. You know, more or less, this is what Hashem says. Kol Amai Hashem. Hashem says something of the following nature, right? Lo Zeh HaDavar B'Feirush, as opposed to Zeh HaDavar, this is the matter which indicates a greater degree of clarity. Well, the fish is our Nevi'im, how you must snap in about Baklari Sheinam Ira, and since we know Chazal tell us that other Nevi'im, other than Moshe Rabbeinu, prophesied, again in the words of Chazal, without Baklari Sheinam Ira, they saw their Nevuah through a non-clear glass. In other words, whatever they saw was not totally distinct, was not totally clear, there was a degree of ambiguity there. So Mishnabim Beloshim Kol, so the other Nevi'im utilized this language of Kol Amai Hashem, thus more or less, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, indicating that there's a certain lack of clarity that the other Nevi'im have relative to the absolute clarity that Moshe Rabbeinu had. That's the Mizrahi's definition. Zeh HaDavar equals clarity, Kol Amai Hashem equals less clarity, and Zeh HaDavar versus Kol Amai Hashem is essentially hinting. And what Chazal say, you know, the difference between the other Nevi'im and Moshe Rabbeinu is seeing the Nevuah through an Asbaklaria Me'ira versus an Asbaklaria Sheina Me'ira. Sheina Matzi, says the Maral, commenting on the Mizrahi, the explanation doesn't quite do justice to this Rashi for a very, very simple reason. So the Tizel Ohoya Al Moshe Klal Lishnabos Beloshen Ko. Shehu miyut v'madre gosso. The lama hoyo mishnabe v'kos shehi al nevuah she'enos v'asbaklaria me'ira. Says the Maral, what the Mizrahi is saying would have been true had Rashi made the following statement. Moshe Rabbeinu only prophesizes with Zeh HaDavar, and the other Nevi'im only prophesies with Kol Amai Hashem. Yeah, that would have been very nice. Moshe Rabbeinu always has a clarity of vision, and the other Nevi'im have, you know, relatively speaking, less of a clarity of vision. That's not what Rashi says. Rashi says that Moshe Rabbeinu prophesizes using both languages, both terms. Sometimes Moshe Rabbeinu says Ko, and sometimes Moshe Rabbeinu says Zeh HaDavar. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu prophesizes with Kol right before the Makkish Bukharis. Kol Amai Hashem kachasol salayu ani yosei b'sof mitzrayim. Right, the Mizosef Hashem. So essentially says the Gurariye, if we follow the Mizrahi to his logical conclusion, what then emerges is the following. So Moshe Rabbeinu sometimes has clarity of Nevuah and sometimes doesn't have clarity of Nevuah. Is that true? That's not what we assume. We assume that Moshe Rabbeinu's clarity of Nevuah was something that was ongoing. It was something that was constant. It wasn't something that was sometimes on and sometimes off. So, you know, what's meant by saying that Moshe Rabbeinu sometimes sees with Zeh HaDavar and sometimes prophesizes with Kol? The explanation is roughly not satisfactory, says the Gur Aryeh. The Nira, so let me tell you what I think, says the Gur Aryeh. The Indian there who told the Nevuah Moshe Rabbeinu all was so madri gosso. This whole issue that Rashi is bringing up about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu prophesizes using one of two possible terms is telling us something very fundamental about the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Nevuah came stand. There's two different types of prophecies. Ha'achas. Hush nisnabu ba kol ha-nevim umay al-maisa Hashem ha-hagasa ba-olam l'chol ha-shenasa ba-olam. One type of nevuah is where the Navi prophesizes about stuff that's going on in the world or stuff that will go on in the world. If you read through, you know, most of the Sifrei HaNevi'im, let's say the Nevi'im Achronim, they're generally either making predictions about history or they're telling the Jewish people about how they're supposed to behave. Right? In other words, they're either talking about current events or they're talking about future events. That's one type of nevuah. In fact, that's the type of nevuah which is more common. Certainly, Moshe Rabbeinu, his nevuah included descriptions of current events and predictions of future events. Right? I mean, to take an example, when Moshe Rabbeinu tells Paro in Mitzrayim, "Ha'asos halayla niyotzei b'sof Mitzrayim," "Umeis kol b'char right, that at midnight on the 15th of Nisan, God is going to kill off all the firstborn in Mitzrayim. He's essentially making a prediction about what's going to happen in the future. When Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people words of admonition, right, so that's not so different than Yeshayah HaNavi telling the Jewish people words of admonition. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu, like all the other Nevi'im, talks about current events, he talks about future events, fine. The Kol El Gam King, Lishnavos Al HaMitzvos HaTorah, Shetzivol HaShem Yisparach Mitiv. However, there's a dimension to the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu that the other prophets don't have. Moshe Rabbeinu is the conduit through which Torah is revealed to the Jewish people. No other Navi reveals Torah. Right? Now, Nevi'im also served in the role as Talmidei Chachamim, Gedolei Hador. They taught Torah the same way that, so to speak, a Rosh Hashiva would teach Torah. Right? And in many cases, the Nevi'im were links in the chain of the Mesorah. In other words, they weren't, you know, divorced from the whole concept of teaching Torah and the like. But a Navi does not reveal Torah through Nevuah. Hey, Navi, Rashai, L'chadish, Dover, Me'ata, the Gemara says. You know, once the Torah was given, so, you know, we don't believe in Navi being able to come along and saying, I just had a revelation, we're supposed to do X, Y, and Z. That's not the way Torah works. But Moshe Rabbeinu revealed Torah through revelation, through prophecy, something that was unique to Moshe Rabbeinu. This aspect of the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu was unique to him, and it was not similar to the first type of prophecy, where in which the prophet talks about current or future events. Right, typically a prophet talks about things that are gonna either happening or gonna happen in the world. Whenever a typical Navi talks about events, he's always talking about things that are by definition temporary. They're temporal, they're things of this world, and they're also fleeting, they're temporary. If the Navi talks about, you know, the events that are going on in his own day, okay, so you know, he's talking to people who are going to die, he's talking about issues that are eventually going to pass, and you know, even if he predicts future events, they're events which will come, and they will go. In other words, there's a lack of permanence to all of those nevuos. That's true. Chazal say that, you know, the nevuos that were written down were nitzrichu l'doros. They have an eternal quality to them. But, you know, relatively speaking, they don't have a real eternal quality to them. Meaning, you know, okay, you know, we years later can read the words of Yeshayah on Shabbos Chazon and still feel that the words are speaking to us, but certainly before mankind was created, those words would not have been relevant. And, you know, if we can imagine a future time when, you know, the Yetzer Hara is removed from people and we no longer are tempted by the things that the Nevi'im were speaking out against, so the words of the Nevi'im are not going to be relevant. That's actually what, you know, the Chazal say, that, you know, in the future, all of the works of the Nevi'im are going to be nullified. They're just not going to be part of the canon of Kisvei HaKodesh anymore, because, you know, at a certain point, we won't need Yeshayah screaming at us and telling us to do the right thing. We'll do the right thing, because God is going to remove the Yetzer Hara from us. So in that way, we're going to do what's right. Right? So there's a certain temporary or fleeting quality to all of the nevuos which the Nevi'im give, right? They're talking about events that happen in specific moments in time, and when those moments pass, the relevance of the nevuah to some extent is outdated. Not so when Moshe Rabbeinu reveals the Torah. The Torah is nitzchius. The Torah is eternity. As the Maral puts it, it's noeg tamid ba'olam ebeli shinoi. The dictates of Torah apply to the world constantly without any change. Who seder mitzvos klali ba'olam. It is the blueprint of creation itself in the world. As the Zohar says, Tzachol b'raisa bara alma. Ribbono shel Olam looked into the Torah, created the world. In other words, Torah speaks to something that is eternal. you know, it's not fleeting. It's not about a specific set of events. It's about concepts and ideas that are everlasting. When God gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, He set up structures in place for the Jewish people that would be eternal. Not things that change as time moves on. No. He feels the Tovin. Based on this, says the Naral, we can understand what Chazal say, that Moshe Rabbeinu saw his Nebuah, that he saw that which he saw with absolute clarity, again, in the words of Chazal, through a clear glass that wasn't fogged up or tinted, you know, or obscured in any way. Why was that? Why was Moshe Rabbeinu granted this incredible gift to be able to see his Nebuos with this clarity? So the answer is, says the Naral, it's not just arbitrary. It's based on the content of what was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu. Ki ha'inyonim ha'kololim he'mushotim ra'chomer u'mishkolim v'yoseh. Because the things that were revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu were mushkolim v'yoseh. They were removed from a physical reality. They were things that were eternal. The dictates of Torah are eternal. So the more eternal and everlasting the content of a Nevuah is going to be, the greater clarity is going to be granted to the one who's privileged to see that Nevuah. If someone is prophesizing about events in this world, there's always going to be a little bit of ambiguity in the Nevuah, simply because the content of the Nevuah is so disworldly that it's hard to get, you know, to connect that Nevuah exactly to a spiritual entity such as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the very spiritual and almost non-temporal nature of the dictates of Torah means that when it's revealed to anyone, when it's revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu in this particular case, it's going to be revealed in a way which has an absolute clarity attached to it. Since the other Nevi'im only saw things that concerned this world, by definition, they saw those things through a glass that was not totally clear. Again, he repeats the idea that the Torah that was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu in the second function of Moshe Rabbeinu was eternal. So coming back to our Rashi, says the Naral, Rashi makes the point that Moshe Rabbeinu used two different terms when expressing different types of Nevuos. He sometimes said, Ko'amai Hashem, and sometimes said, as we find in the Pesha, Zeh HaDavar Shesiva Hashem. Zeh HaDavar, says the Naral, is only used by Moshe Rabbeinu, by the Torah, when Moshe Rabbeinu is revealing laws, when he's revealing aspects of Torah that are eternal and are not dependent on any particular reality or any particular context or any particular situation. And it's those laws of Torah that were revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu through this incredible degree of clarity. And that's always what's indicated by Zeh HaDavar. However, when Moshe Rabbeinu wants to fulfill the role which is played by other Nevi'im, namely, he wants to speak about current events, either to exhort the Jewish people or to predict something which is going to happen in the future. Again, Moshe Rabbeinu not as the one revealing the Torah, but simply Moshe Rabbeinu playing the role of every Nevi, So when Moshe Rabbeinu plays that role, he uses the language of Kol Amar Hashem. For instance, Moshe Amar Moshe Kol Amar Hashem Ka'asos HaLailo. Like the example quoted by Rashi, where Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to Paro and he says, at midnight all of the Bukharim are going to die. Kol Amar Hashem. Why? Because he's not revealing the halacha. Right? He's simply he's making a prediction as to what's going to happen. Yeshaya could have said the same thing. Yirmiyahu could have said the same thing. V'chein kol amar Hashem ibru v'shuvu. Another example. Right? After the Chet Ha'egel, after the sin of the golden calf, so Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to the Levim, and he says, thus says Hashem, go and kill out anyone who is involved in the Chet Ha'egel. Now, on a certain level, that's a commandment. But it's not really an eternal commandment. It's not one of the 613 mitzvot. It's not something that has eternal significance. It's Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to the Levim at that particular juncture in time and giving them instructions that were very time-specific. They were very event-specific. There's no mitzvah, you know, in general, for a Levim to go and kill people who are building a golden calf. Yeah, you'll look through the Tariq Mitzvahs of the Rambam, you're not going to find it, right? Now, it's not a revelation of halacha that has eternal status. It's rather a command for the moment. It's a tzav hashah. It's something that is just meant to be conveyed for that particular moment in time, which Moshe Rabbeinu was conveying. Kizot ha-mitzvah, eram ha-mitzvah ha-mitzvah. Again, it is a mitzvah, it is a commandment in the narrow sense of the term, but it's not eternal. Right, so that's the difference, says the Guraya, between the lashon of Kol Amar Hashem and the lashon, the language of Zeh HaDavar. I think there are a number of things that emerge from this Guraya, which is just very important on a Hashkafic level. So, I mean, first of all, we know that one of the 13 principles of faith, as articulated by the Rambam, one of the Yudkei Mo'ikrei Amuna, is to believe that the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu was fundamentally different than the Nevuah of all other Nevi'im. And that, of course, gives rise to the following question. Granted, that's true. Okay, we're not debating the truth of that proposition. But why is that proposition so important that it's included in the 13 articles of faith of the Rambam? Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu had a different level of Nevuah than other Nevi'im. So, okay, it's a nice thing to know, right? When I apply to Navi school, so, you know, that'll be on my entrance exam. Fine, good. But, you know, to say that it's one of the Yud Gimel Ikra Emuna, that it's one of the fundamental aspects of faith, why should it be one of the fundamental aspects of faith? Right? So the answer would appear to be that if you don't accept that Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah in receiving the Torah was of a unique nature, so what's to stop some other person coming along at some later point in time and saying, I'm a Navi, and I had a revelation from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he told me, that you know what, that thing of that cheeseburgers that Moshe Rabbeinu said, No, you got it wrong. Right? The second revelation, Ribbono Shel Olam said, this just in, cheeseburgers are mutter. It's all good. Go out there, enjoy. Gesunte, right? What's to stop somebody from doing that? You know, again, in theory, if somebody could have Nevuah on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, again, not just that they saw things with tremendous clarity, but that the nature of their Nevuah is that they could receive laws from HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Nevuah, so then the whole Torah could be turned upside down. Right? So a fundamental aspect of our belief in Torah Min HaShamayim is tied to this idea that the Nevuah that Moshe Rabbeinu had in receiving the Torah is of a unique nature, it can never be duplicated, and that goes hand in hand with the idea that the Torah can never be exchanged or changed in any way, because the unique Nevuah that Moshe Rabbeinu had in receiving the Torah has that quality. The Maharal is bringing out the idea that the Nevuah, the uniqueness of the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu has relevance particularly with regard to the role of Moshe Rabbeinu as a legislator, as one who is revealing the Torah to Klal Yisrael. When Moshe Rabbeinu spoke about other things, in a sense, his Nevuah was not really so different than the Nevuah of Yeshayah or Yirmiyahu, or at least, you know, that's the way it's expressed in Chumash. Kol Amar Hashem, Yeshayah says, and Kol Amar Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu says. But Zeh HaDavar, this idea that the laws, which are the Torah, which is revealed by Moshe Rabbeinu, is of a unique nature. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu has the Asparklario Hami'iro, that's why he has that clarity of vision, because again, if Moshe Rabbeinu was passing on the Torah to Klal Yisrael, he can't have a general idea of what Torah is about. He has to really know what Torah is about, right? You know, again, if Moshe Rabbeinu came to us and said, you know, Kolam Hashem, more or less, these are the halachos of Nedarim, that's not going to work, right? We need absolute clarity in the laws that Moshe Rabbeinu is revealing. There's an interesting comment of Yosef Albo has in his Sefer HaYikarim in famous Gimel Perek Yudeis. We're building on this idea. He says, Iker Metzias HaNavua B'min HaAdam. The reason that there is Nevuah, says Rav Yosef Albo, it's not just fortune telling. You know, the role of a prophet is not just to tell you how to make prophets, right? It's not just fortune telling for the future, right? It's the reason that God gives Nevuah to Nevi'im is to enable the Jewish people to be able to reach a level of shleimus, of spiritual perfection. And based on that, Rabbi Yosef Albo explains a Maimer Chazal, which Rashi brings in his commentary on Korma. So we mentioned before the Maisa Ho'egel, right, the sin of the golden calf. So right after the sin of the golden calf, Pasuk says, "Vayom Hashem Moshe lech reid kishiches amcha," right? Go down because your nation has acted wrongly. You know, they've messed up. So Chazal say, "What do you mean lech reid? You know, go down, not just go down from the mountain, but Reid Migdulascha, go down, Moshe Rabbeinu, from your pedestal. I only gave you this high level of Nebuah because of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael are not going to be deserving, so you're not deserving of this level of Nebuah either." So I think we usually read that, we say, okay, that's sort of like a slap in the face to Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, it's the Rebbe Shlomo is saying, you know, don't think you're so great, it's only because of Klal Yisrael. So Rabbi Yosef Albo, no, so much more than that. What the Rebbe Shlomo was telling to Moshe Rabbeinu was as follows. The purpose of Nevuah is to show the people what to do. If the people aren't going to do the right thing, and they're hopeless, so to speak, Shichei's Amcha, again, however you define hopeless, so then you, Moshe Rabbeinu, have no purpose in being a Navi of that caliber. But I gave you Nevuah just so you can, you know, play the market, and you know, you always know which stock, you know, to put your money on. That's not why I made you a Navi. I made you a Navi so you should bring up Klal Yisrael. If Klal Yisrael are beyond redemption, however you're going to define that, so then what's the point? So then you, Moshe Rabbeinu, don't have a role to play anymore. So lech reid migdulascha. So go down from your greatness. It's very, very similar to the idea that Maharal was saying over here, that the special quality of Asaklari Meir that was granted Moshe Rabbeinu was the Davka, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to be a conduit to reveal the Torah to Klal Yisrael, and it's Davka with regard to Torah, not with regard to other aspects of Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah, that he has that quality of Asaklari Meir, which is expressed by Zeh HaDavar Asher Tzivo Hashem. Okay, we'll pick up after my refresh with Hashem with another thought from the Maharal, from the Chabad of Akasha Omer. Okay. Welcome back to the second half of the shiur and Maral Goralye Hashios Matos Mate. Just before we get started, so Rabbi Rubin points out that tonight and tomorrow is the yard site of Rashi, so certainly it's appropriate. We'll get to the Maral in a moment, but the Maral always bases himself on the words of Rashi, so we'll start with the words of Rashi, and certainly it should be an Aliyah Neshama. Rashi is the great Rebbe of all of Klal Yisrael. So you know, certainly it's a special time to be learning a Rashi. All right, so the first Rashi Maral we saw before Meir focused on a Rashi from Parshas Matos. Let's do a Rashi from Parshas Matzeh. So towards the end of Parshas Matzeh, Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Tes, the Torah introduces the concept of the Orei Miklot, the cities of refuge, that if a person kills someone else b'shogeg. B'shogeg means accidentally, but with a degree of negligence. You know, it's not a total accident. There's a degree of negligence involved. So the person has to run to a near mikloy, has to run to a city of refuge, and ultimately, if he's found to have killed the b'shogeg, so he stays in that city of refuge until the Kohen Gadol passes away. So the Torah lifts off that at that time there were six Hare Miklot which were going to be set aside, six on the eastern side of the Jordan, six on the western side of the Jordan.
Three,
thank you. That's, you know, they say there are three types of people when it comes to doing math. There are those who know how to do math and those who don't. Three types of people. Three on the western side. You'll think about it, you'll get it afterwards. There are three Ari Miklot on the western side of the Jordan, three Ari Miklot on the eastern side of the Jordan. So Kamen Sashi Pasuk Yizalud Akal Tisha the Eretz Kanan Tisha Shvatim the Kan Einon El Shayim V'Chetzi. You know, the math really doesn't work out. Why? Because, you know, there were 9.5 tribes on the western side of the Jordan. There were 2.5 tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan. So in other words, there was a far greater population on the western side of the Jordan than on the eastern side of the Jordan. So you would think that if you're going to make cities of refuge based on population distribution, so then there should be more cities on the western side than on the eastern side. So how come, you know, there are three on one side, three on the other? The Gemara Makkos asked this question. Right? So, nonetheless, says Rashi, again, quoting the Gemara Makkos, Tishva Minyari Miklash Shalohem, there's an equal number, three on the eastern side, three on the western side, Yishom the Begilad Nefishe Rotzim. And the reason for that is that in Gilad, Gilad is on the eastern side of the Jordan, in Gilad there are many murderers. It was a tough town, a tough area, many murderers in Gilad, and therefore there was a need, you know, even though there's a smaller population, relatively speaking, on the eastern side of the Jordan, there was a greater need for Ari Miklot, for cities of refuge, and Rashi, again, quoting the Gemara Makkos, goes on to quote a pasuk in Hosea that indicates that in Gilad, you know, there were indeed many roads and many murderers. Comes the Maral, and he brings the kasha, which is asked by the Rishonim, by the Ramban, by Tosus and Makkos, the Sabbath, the kasha. Halo Ari Miklot lo nasu el l'shogigin. Lo shayich dinafishe shogigin. Dinafishe shogigin. The Gilad nafishe rotzim, or the Gilad shliche rotzim, means there were a lot of murderers in Gilad. What does that mean? Presumably it means there were many people who murdered intentionally. In other words, it was a tough place. Right? There were gangs, you know, running around Gilad. You know, it was a tough group of people. That's irrelevant to the presence of Ari Miklot, because Ari Miklot are designed for people who kill unintentionally. You can't say on the surface that a certain area has many unintentional murderers. I mean, you can say that a certain place, you know, it's a rough town, you know, so there are a lot of cutthroat people in that town. They kill intentionally. But how can you say that a certain place has a tendency to have unintentional murderers? It wouldn't seem that you could predict the number of unintentional murderers. Okay, so let's see. So, you know, this question is asked by the Rishonim, again, as we indicated. The Tirat HaRamban, so the Ramban gives one answer. He says, Ki hayu harbei nizidim, umedam anachlam shogigim. Since there were so many murderers, they tried to pass themselves off as unintentional murderers, you know. Oh, you know, when I pulled the sort of, you know, pistol out of my pocket and shot him three times in the heart at close range, that was an accident. Right? And, you know, it's just, well, whatever, you know, sometimes, you know, these things happen, right? You know, they were trying to pass themselves off to shogigin. Look, how are they, how you go with the shogigin? So
So the Maisa, there were many, many people running away to the Ari Mikla, because remember, until the trial, you couldn't discern who was the Shogeg and who was the Mazid, who was unintentional, who was intentional. Right? So there were many Ari Mikla, not because there were more unintentional murderers, but because there were more intentional murderers in Gilad, there was a lot of processing that had to be done. Right? So there was a greater number of Ari Mikla, says the Ramban, because there was just so many more people running to the Ir Mikla, even though in the end of the day, a fraction of those people ended up staying in the Ir Mikla. Many of them were thrown out of the Ir Mikla. You know, it was not appropriate for those people. The Voyastic Teretz there. Says the Maral, though, I'm not happy with this answer. Shiyotze roi shalolosif Ari Mikla. Sha'oz lo yarov v'nezev yom ha'shogeg haya. The truth is, if you have a sense of responsibility for society, says the Maral, better to not make the extra Ari Mikla, because by making the extra Ari Mikla, you're actually encouraging people to kill intentionally and to try to claim that they're doing it unintentionally. What are you doing? In other words, you're rewarding the bad behavior. No, we're going to send by extra Ari Mikla because there are a lot of charlatans out there who are going to try to claim that they're really killing unintentionally when in fact they're killing in a premeditated fashion. Why are we catering to the needs of premeditated murderers, right? Those are not, they're not our friends. We don't want to make life a little easier for them. Oh, there's a lot of processing involved, you know. I mean, never fish up to stand in line, you know. No, we don't want to help those people. We don't want to do anything to encourage them in their acts of murder. So says the Maral, he's not happy with this answer of the Rambam. Then he brings a second answer. The Achi Moreno Arav Sinai Nitrag Nasi Rachmano Parke, very interesting. The Maral quotes his brother. He had a brother, Rabbeinu Sinai. Sinai is a name. There are people named Sinai. It's not as common a name, but it's a name. So the Maral had a brother named Sinai who lived in Prague. And he says, my brother said the following answer. Ki b'chol makom yesh shogegim. There are unintentional murderers throughout the map. You know, the percentage of people who kill unintentionally is going to be the same across the board. However, to be sent to an Ir Mikla, to be sent to a city of refuge, there have to be witnesses who witness the person kill unintentionally. Right? I mean, if there are witnesses, he doesn't get that punishment. So because of that, there's a large percentage of people who kill even unintentionally who never make it to an Ir Mikla, because again, there are no witnesses to send the person to the city of refuge, right? However, so he then goes on to quote a Gemara in Makkos. Rabbi Rubin briefly referenced this before. The Gemara in Makkos says, you know, God has a way of making everything work out. How so? Says the Gemara, imagine the following. There are two people. One kills the Mazid intentionally without witnesses. The other killed unintentionally without witnesses. The one who killed intentionally without witnesses is never going to get capital punishment because there are no witnesses to the crime. The one who killed unintentionally without witnesses will never get the punishment of going to the city of refuge and being stuck there because he too has no witnesses to his crime. You know, says the Gemara, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, runs the world. So he creates a scenario where the unintentional murderer ends up unintentionally murdering the intentional murderer. Right? So the guy who killed intentionally the first time around ends up getting killed unintentionally by the other guy who killed unintentionally the first time around, and this time there are witnesses. So what happens? Says the Gemara, everybody's going to get their just desserts. The guy who killed intentionally before ends up 6 feet under. The guy who killed unintentionally before will be sent to the Ir Mikla, to the city of refuge, who will go into exile, because this time around there are witnesses. Says Rabbeinu Sinai, the brother of the Maral, that's what the Gemara means when it says that there were more people being sent into Golos and Gilad because there were more premeditated murderers. There were more opportunities for God to bring this type of scenario about. In other words, normally, people who kill unintentionally very often don't have witnesses to the deed, so they never get sent to an Ir Miklat. Here, because there were more opportunities for them to be put into this scenario, where they end up killing a real rotzeach, a real premeditated murderer, albeit unintentionally, so there are more opportunities, you know, a greater percentage of those who kill unintentionally end up in the Ir Miklat at the end of the day. That's a quote from his brother. The Nachon Huma'od Pirush is there. And that's the Maral, and this interpretation is very, very good, very, very correct. I guess if it's your brother saying it, you have to say it's a very good interpretation. But as Rabbi Hartman points out in his notes, for the Maral, Tosfos and Makos said something similar, you know, in explaining this to Mark. Yes, I don't know. But then the Maral goes on to say a third explanation, which is his own, and I think of all the explanations, there's something very, very profound and moving about this explanation. Nearly, it seems to me, says the Maral of Thomas, he calls Shogig Hoyololios Nifash Lo Yarog, L'chach Hayav Golos. As we said before, a Shogig is not someone who kills purely by accident. Such a person, you know, as the Rambam makes clear, does not go to an Ir Miklat at all. I mean, if it's totally, totally not the person's fault, he doesn't go into Golos. However, you know, a person who gets sent to the Ir Miklat is someone who kills unintentionally, but with a degree of negligence. You know, he wasn't sufficiently careful in order to avoid the situation. If there's no negligence, why should he be punished at all by being sent into Golos? What did he do? He should have been more careful. The fact that in Gilad there were so many intentional murderers led to what we might call a trickle-down effect. Says the Maral, in an environment where you have people who are going out there and killing one another intentionally, it creates a certain sense of disregard for human life. It makes human life cheap. And therefore, even the people who are not premeditated murderers are just not as careful as they should be. When you have more people killing intentionally, it leads to more people killing unintentionally. But we said before that how can you say that, you know, in this place there are more unintentional murderers than that place? It should be statistically the same thing across the board. Says the Maral, no, that there's a trickle-down effect. When you have a society where there's no concern for human life, that affects everybody. Even the people who are quote-unquote good guys, you know, are going to be impacted upon by that. Ulefikach, kamosha timsa harde mizidin, right? Because you can show how you also have the show you did. So therefore it follows, says the Maral, if there are more intentional murderers in Gilad, there are going to be more unintentional murderers in Gilad as well. That's why they needed so many extra, you know, Ari Mikla to handle the greater number of unintentional murderers, because there is a correlation between those killing in a premeditated fashion and those who are killing in a, you know, quote-unquote accidental. It's a tremendously profound Maral, because basically the Maral is saying, you don't realize the effect that the society has on you, even when you reject its mores. Right? In other words, if you would have asked these people who killed unintentionally, is it right to kill people? There was, no, of course not. No, we're out. What do you think, we're a bunch of gangsters? Not gangsters. Right? Those guys are the gangsters. But you know what? When you walk outside every day, and there's a gunshot every day, and, you know, a guy drops dead across the street, you know, from a gunshot wound, sooner or later, it has an impact on you. It may not, you know, lead you to pick up a gun and shoot someone yourself, but it certainly creates a certain degree of disregard for human life. And that means, you know, maybe you're not going to be as careful, you know, next time you go out duck hunting or whatever, you know, to make sure that the coast is clear before, you know, you start shooting. In other words, it has a trickle-down effect on everyone. We don't realize how impactful the society in which we live is, you know, even when we, on the surface, reject you know, the values of that society, but, you know, one way or the other, they have a way of seeping into our consciousness and affecting us on a subconscious level.
You see, you're talking about one bird that has an effect on the individual, that he's, maybe it's a showcase, that he sort of lost, he didn't have to proceed with life. So say people that affected by television and the media.
Well, I mean, you see, it's a very contemporary morale. I mean, you know, the studies that are done about, you know, the impact of, you know, violence in video games and violence that's viewed in all kinds of media and stuff like that. In other words, you know, the vast majority of the people watching these things would, you know, if you ask them, is it okay to kill somebody? No, of course not. Right? But if you see it, it creates a certain disregard, you know, for human life. So, okay, so maybe you won't go out and shoot somebody, but maybe, you know, you won't be as careful when you're driving. You know, you think you're in the video game when you're driving, and, you know, you'll be, you know, you won't be as cognizant of the need to be careful of somebody else's life, because what's life anyway? Okay, look, we're going into the 9 days, you know, very, very soon, and, you know, there's this Hashem, this sense of the need to have a heightened sensitivity should still be something that we certainly take to heart, and there's a session that will be one step closer, you know, to bringing back the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, I'm not sure if you have a minion, but that's what we'll pick up next week, you know, Wednesday night, following Mincha.